I mean, what's Pro Football Focus doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
Hey, as a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PFF.
Do you not understand that they are that way because you're Joe Flacco?
And you just like to discredit things that people deserve credit for.
That you can't possibly be expected to defend that.
Talk about the game, Sam.
So,
who cares about what people think about us?
Yeah, I like football season and all the things that go with it.
Welcome in to the PFF NFL podcast. Steve Palazzolo back here with Sam Monson, and we are previewing all the Week 16 NFL action. Is this more festive for you? I found moose. There's more moose, but there's at least a Christmas tree in there.
There are more moose. What is the moose obsession you have?
I don't know. I think it's because it looks enough like a reindeer. They have antlers like a reindeer, so people just throw them on Christmas stuff, I guess.
Yeah, mistakenly, presumably. I mean,
yeah, I don't know. I just buy the sweater, like, years ago.
Are you also, like, limited in, you know, it's like, a friend of mine used to have to buy soccer cleats whenever he found them in his size because he didn't know when the next time he would ever see them in size giant was. Are you like that with, you know, Christmas sweaters? Like, if you see one that's you just got to go.
Grab what's there. This was pre, like, the Christmas sweater rage. You know, they're now all over the place, and I'm not going out of my way to find one. So this one has done me well for about 10 years. So here we are. It's the Christmas show, getting ready. Last show before Christmas, previewing all of the Week 16 action.
Yeah, I don't have a Christmas sweater.
No, you don't even have like a heart foundation or anything. Nothing.
I mean, I own one of those, but I'm not wearing it.
You should wear that next time. I had my Macho Man stuff on yesterday.
You did.
We're live on YouTube. Appreciate everybody who tunes in live. Do you tweet this thing out? Tell the people that we're here?
Yeah.
All right, great.
I tweeted it.
All right, let's get to all the games. We previewed Thursday night football yesterday, midweek show, the Wednesday show that we always do. We previewed all of the games. And before we get into it, just want to remind people, if you want your PFF subscriptions, now is a great time to do it for two reasons. First, NFL Pod gets you 25% off anything. And I know draft season's right around the corner. A lot of your teams are going to get eliminated these next few weeks. So now's the time to get 25% off the draft guide and everything else that we have to offer using promo code NFLPOD. And then if you're already in the Edge world, you can elite up 50% off using the promo code ELITEUP. Look at that, 50% off the Elite subscription. That is a massive deal. This is one of the best deals.
And I believe that we have all year. I believe you don't even need to have Edge to use that.
That'll
just get you 50% off any Elite subscription.
That's for any Elite subscription?
As far as I'm aware.
I did not know. Because historically we would say, look, hey, Edge users, you can elite up. Elite up works for anybody.
Now look, if I'm wrong, I apologize to the thousands and millions of listeners, but if I'm right, 50% off any Elite subscription.
Man, that's awesome. Well, go check it out. PFF.com, Elite Up, 50% off sale. I don't know how long it's going to last, but go check it out at PFF.com. All right, let's get into all the games. We've got 15 to preview here, Sam, so it'll be a nice crisp 7.5 hours. Indianapolis Colts at the Arizona Cardinals. There's a couple decent Christmas Day games here. This is one of them. It's the night game on Christmas Day. Arizona Cardinals coming off a very difficult loss to the Detroit Lions. Colts coming off a huge win.
Difficult loss. Yeah.
Because it was, you know,
anytime you lose to the Lions.
To the Lions.
Difficult loss.
Yeah. So Arizona coming off a loss. Colts coming off a huge win against the New England Patriots. But Vegas isn't completely, you know, overreacting. But maybe they are. Arizona only by one? Would that be the spread a few weeks ago? Arizona favored by one right now at home on Christmas night.
Which kind of makes sense, though. I don't think it's an unfair line. The Colts are one of the hottest teams in the NFL right now. They're one of the most difficult for opposition to match up with because they have... They're winning in that throwback kind of style. Them, the New England Patriots, the 49ers to a degree... Those teams that are all kind of cooking right at the moment are not the teams that people expected to be the best teams in the league, or certainly weren't the best teams in the league to start when we were talking about these high-octane passing offenses like Dallas, like Arizona, you know, all those kinds of teams. So all of a sudden, teams like the Cardinals, like the Bills, you know, they are scrambling to try and figure out how to slow down these dominant ground attacks that we're seeing. And I think... This is an interesting game for Arizona for that reason. They have to try and pivot and figure out how to stop Jonathan Taylor, the Indianapolis Colts run offense. Last week they got beaten by some big gains by, you know, the Lions. Now, Detroit has a pretty powerful offensive line. Craig Reynolds randomly in the last couple of weeks has been one of the best running backs in the league, but it's being scaled up again. So Arizona needs some answers. And one thing that strikes me is that they need to bring Zaven Collins back into the lineup. Like, that guy has disappeared in the last few weeks, basically hasn't been playing. Had an injury that knocked him out for a while, but he's been back. Like, he was the guy that made the, was it the onside recovery a couple of weeks ago? That was Zaven Collins. He just didn't play a single snap on defense. So I think he's their best run-stuffing linebacker. Okay, he might have some weaknesses in coverage, but it's Jared. I mean, it's like, it was Jared Goff and the Lions last week. It's Carson Wentz and the Colts this week. I think it's worth the sacrifice to try and get better against the run.
Yeah, Cardinals, 8th worst run defense grade in the NFL. Zaven Collins, about a 70, 69.9 run defense grade, which is one of the better ones on the team, as you mentioned. It's an interesting dynamic there because, again, you know, we would never say let's go out of our way to create this elite run defense at the expense of having a strong back seven as far as coverage goes. But against this Colts team, that they're not like completely run heavy all the time, right? We had a couple weeks ago against the Bucs where they were throwing it around the yard and didn't run the ball until maybe the fourth quarter. The Colts are versatile. They will adjust to the game situation. But against this Arizona team, I think they're going to try to get Jonathan Taylor going early and often. Jonathan Taylor getting all of his MVP hype, Sam, which I know you love. Mm. But look, Taylor's been fantastic as far as what he does when he's given good run blocking, what he does when he's not given good run blocking. He's, I think he hit the top speed for NGS the other day, which is usually, look, when they do that, you have to build up ahead of steam, and it's almost always on plays where
it's a long run, a straight line. Like, why? I don't know why people use that as a number.
When you pull out the top speeds from the year, it's always like this 50-yard run and 50-yard catch and all that stuff. But it's the top speed of the year. It just kind of shows, like, hey, Taylor does have that breakaway speed. But I think that's not even his best attribute. His best attribute is his ability to just sift through traffic and use his blocking and make guys miss when needed. So Taylor's really good. He's an excellent player. And the Colts are putting a lot of points on the board, number 3 in the NFL.
Yeah. I'm also kind of interested which quarterback, if either, is going to melt down in this game. Carson Wentz, as we've said, has 14 turnover-worthy plays on the year, 10 of which have come in a three-game stretch. I mean,
Three games, not necessarily in a row.
Two-game stretch and then a third game. So 10 of his 14 came in three games. Kyler Murray, 7, I think, of his 10 or 11 or something like that came in the last 2 weeks.
7 of 11 in the last 2 weeks.
Right.
Since coming back from his injury, since missing every game since.
So those two quarterbacks overall have actually got a really low turnover-worthy play rate. But each of them has a couple of games where all of them happened. And in Kyler Murray's case, they've been the most recent two games, which have been back-to-back defeats. The Colts, bizarrely, are actually 2-1 in the games where Wentz has had a meltdown and tried to turn the ball over a million times. So does either one of those guys have one of those games this week? Because as much as the Colts have bucked that trend, it's so hard to win when your quarterback does that.
Yeah, so Kyler Murray, since coming back, has been not as good as he was earlier in the year. Still has one of the better passing grades in the NFL. But we had a game against Chicago where I think the stats were a little bit inflated. He didn't have to throw the ball a ton, but his accuracy was a little off. Made a beautiful throw to Nuke Hopkins. Comes back, he's got that Rams Monday Night Football game where he just had a plethora of special plays. He had 5 big-time throws.
Plethora, good word.
Plethora, there we go. We're getting the vocab expanded a little bit here. But Kyler also threw the ball into coverage a ton, and he had a similar game against Detroit, a little bit more on the volatile end. So his accuracy needs to get it back on track, I would say, compared to what he was earlier in the season. Even just using like completion percentage, which isn't great, but Kyler was well over 70% for much of the season. Last couple games down to 65, down to 56 against Detroit. Just saying there's a few more misses in there than there were early in the year for Kyler Murray. So Arizona back, you know, fighting for a playoff position, fighting for a lot here. And of course the Colts in a similar boat. They're 8-6. You know, they're not one of those 19-7-7 teams in the AFC, but every game matters for both of these teams, which is why it's such a good game. So I think it's a really good matchup here. Arizona is currently tied at the top of the NFC West with the Rams. And that's the ebbs and flows of the season, right? A couple weeks ago, Arizona was two games ahead of the Rams. Now it's tied. So huge game for the Cardinals. And again, the Colts right behind the Titans in the AFC South. But I think more importantly, because they'd have to, they would need a Titans meltdown.
Yes.
To win the AFC South. More importantly, the Colts fighting for that wild card spot and playoff seeding here. We've talked a lot about Carson Wentz just from a turnover-worthy play standpoint, Sam. But overall, the grade's not very good. It's just a 70. It's not great. He's just been okay this year, and he was better earlier in the year than he's been. Like, here's what he has. Three games with grades under 50.
Yeah.
And that's those are the ones you need to avoid.
The meltdown games.
Yeah, those are the ones you need to avoid. I don't think he'll do that again this week against the Cardinals, but they just won with him throwing 57 yards. And he had five completions and three turnover-worthy plays last week. Carson Wentz, I think, has to play a lot better this week if the Colts are going to pull this off.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think if either one of those quarterbacks has one of those meltdown games where they have three-plus turnover-worthy plays, I don't see that team winning. What happens if neither of them does and they both play a pretty clean brand of football becomes more interesting, and that I think, gives the Cardinals, I think, a much better chance of winning the game. But Wentz, for most of the season, hasn't needed to do that. He's just needed to not screw it up.
The one little matchup I want to keep an eye on, Darius Leonard in the middle of the field and the turnover machine, and then Zach Ertz as the as DeAndre Hopkins, now that he's hurt, since they brought Zach Ertz and he has added a different element to this offense in Arizona, you might have a little bit more Zach Ertz dependency, I would say, if you're the Cardinals. And that's where Darius Leonard resides. So just trying to see how this Arizona offense handles DeAndre Hopkins in his absence here. Where are you going? 1 point for Arizona.
Colts. I'm buying into the runaway.
You're all in.
John the Taylor freight train.
All right. Give me the Cardinals bouncing back here. Disappointing effort. I think one team's feeling great about a win against the Pats, another team's feeling horrible about a loss against the Lions, and it's going to reverse. Christmas cheer for the Arizona Cardinals that night. So give me the Cardinals to cover the one. Mention the Patriots. They're hosting the Buffalo Bills, and they're favored by 2.5. We got a nice rematch from that Monday night football game a couple weeks ago. I know that you... I'm fascinated by it. I know where your analysis is going to go, because we've talked about this one before. Right? I think. You said you're a big throw-the-game-out guy, and you don't want to throw out Monday Night Football. You think because Buffalo, New England ran all over Buffalo on Monday Night Football without even the threat of a pass, that they're going to do that again, and they're going to have play action, and Patriots are going to have a huge advantage, that we're going to take a lot from that Monday Night game and play off of that. I don't know if that's the case. I think the whole game's different.
Of course.
But what are your thoughts on this game? 2.5 for the Patriots here.
My whole point about that game was that, people went into that game with videos of the howling wind and the insane weather and the madness. And like an hour before the game, everybody was out there saying, you're not going to be able to take anything from this game. It is one of those games where the weather is so ridiculous, the outcome is meaningless beyond the ramifications of what the loss or the win means for either one of these teams, right? You're not going to be able to get meaningful insights out of the way the game happened. Just the Colts or the Bills lost, therefore, they are in much more trouble, the page, blah, blah, blah. And then as soon as the game happened, it was like, oh, let me tell you what this means. Like, the Bills can't do this. The Patriots can't pass. They don't trust Mac Jones, all these things. It's like, well, you can't do both of those things. You have to stick with the idea that you can't get anything from it, or determine that you could get something from it. To me, it was largely meaningless in terms of style and all these kinds of things. I don't think that they, don't trust Mac Jones to pass the ball, all these kinds of things. What I do think is that there is something to the idea that Buffalo struggles to stop powerful offensive lines, powerful run games. They couldn't stop the Colts. They stopped the Patriots a few times in that game, but by and large, New England had success on the ground despite literally zero threat of the pass game. And then the one other thing I think that is notable is that New England didn't have to show the Buffalo Bills any of their passing attack. So they kind of kept their powder dry, all of which can come out in this game. Now, obviously, they've they've passed in other games. So it's not like Buffalo doesn't know what the Patriots do. But I think there is something to the idea that they didn't need to bring out anything specific for the Buffalo Bills. So Buffalo now needs to go into this game knowing that they got controlled by the Colts, knowing that they got controlled by the Patriots, and show that with the added threat of a pass, they can still clamp down and shut down New England's run game. I think that's this game.
So, yeah, look, I think there's definitely something to that. It's tough to when you look at the Bills' run defense is just an interesting part of the game in general, because you had the 63 or whatever yard run in that game. There was another drive where New England kept reeling off like 8 at a time, 9 at a time, and the overall numbers were generally good. And then Buffalo did have a few big stops in the run game. There is a point where you can overload the box, and in overtime you're going to win defensively if you outnumber the offense. So I think Buffalo is going to deploy more resources to the run game in this particular game. And that will put more and put the pressure on Mac Jones, put the onus on him to make those plays. I love this Mac Jones, Josh Allen matchup because they go about things differently, right? You've got a quick release, get rid of the ball, Mac Jones versus a hold on to it, make a play. Josh, there's a lot of quick game type stuff in Buffalo's offense, but Josh Allen, for the most part, is trying to make big time throws. He's trying to make big plays down the field, which he's really good at. But will he keep the ball out of harm's way? I think Mac Jones last week was the first game Mac Jones threw the ball since the that Monday night game. He was good overall outside of two or three throws. Left a few on the he missed a few.
Yeah, dug
the
himself
two that
a
he
hole.
Missed was in the red zone. And then late to the flat. There was a couple times where he just hesitated and was late. Jones has to avoid those plays. Because other than that, he did do a pretty good job in that Patriots comeback.
He did. And people were writing him off at that point. Like, Jones threw a couple of hideous interceptions. The Patriots are in a hole. And people on Twitter were, like, openly mocking him. We're like, oh, now Mac Jones leads a comeback for the rest of this game, not being able to run the ball. Good luck with that, Patriots fans. And he actually did pretty well. Like, okay, he didn't get all the way back. The Colts end up with a big Jonathan Taylor run and ice the game as it was getting close. But in that situation, given the sort of feeling that, oh, now the wheels are coming off completely, Mac Jones, without being protected, is screwed, he did play reasonably well to claw back those big mistakes. Now, obviously, your point is you need to avoid the big mistakes in the first place, which is absolutely true. But generally, by and large, he has done that this year. And it's actually interesting when you look at these two quarterbacks, they are 8th and 9th in PFF grade.
Right.
Josh Allen's one ahead. Josh Allen obviously has a higher big-time throw rate, but it's not massive. It's 5.4% versus 4.4%, which is top 10 versus 17th for Mac Jones. They're not evenly matched because they're obviously very different stylistic quarterbacks and it's comprised differently. But like the gap between the two,
but the overall
play is probably closer than you think.
But the difference is Josh Allen's dropped back 130 more times.
Yeah, and it's all on his shoulders.
Right, and had a whole bunch more. That's just dropbacks. Whole bunch more like design runs and everything. That Josh Allen is the catalyst for the Bills' offense, whereas Mac Jones is the facilitator of the Patriots' offense.
Allen is the number one graded quarterback in the NFL in terms of PFF rush grade.
Yeah, he's been, and again, the rush grade is going to factor in design runs. It's going to factor in scrambles. That's the other X factor. Now, New England's generally good, really good, at keeping quarterbacks in the pocket and, you know, caring about rush lanes and all that stuff. But I think that's going to be a huge factor. To me, it's going to be about Josh Allen. Does he try to put this all on his shoulders and go into New England and carry the Bills again and do too much? Because he does try to do too much. That's why he has 22 turnover-worthy plays. That's second in the NFL to Ben Roethlisberger. Does Josh Allen try to do too much, or does he let the game come to him? Take the underneath stuff when it's there. Don't force it to Stephon Diggs too much. Cole Beasley's out, so you don't have that. You don't have that security blanket underneath. More tight ends perhaps involved here. So, but you can't force this to Stephon Diggs, and you can't just take off and run like crazy if you're Josh Allen. So I think that battle is going to be a good one. The other part about Mac Jones having to throw the ball more than three times in this one, Bills have a really good pass defense overall.
Or did before Tre'Davious White.
They did before Tre'Davious White. I thought they did a good job overall against the Bucs. Definitely gave up some big plays, including the walk-off. Last week was the Panthers, and Cam Newton looked horrible. And, mm-hmm. you know, is how much is that the Bills? How much of that is Cam Newton? So we don't have a ton of evidence.
This is the first game where they should be tested without that, without Tre'Davious White in terms of the pass game.
Well, the Bucs game was, but I thought there was some good and there was some bad. They got attacked in the middle of the field. And, you know, that is where New England likes to attack. So if you're New England, the Bucs had a lot of success in the middle of the field or opportunities in the middle of the field. That is where New England's probably going to attack the Tremaine Edmonds of the world on this Bills defense. So where are you going with this one? New England coming off a tough loss. And this game decides home field. I mean, the division, home field advantage in the playoffs. There's a lot at stake here. New England favored by 2.5.
It's fascinating. Like the fact that New England then lost the game and the Bills, you know, got this. It became closer. Like it looked like New England, by virtue of that crazy weather game, actually took complete control. And then they drop a game and it closes right back up. And this becomes everything again. I still think that the Patriots match up well with Buffalo, and until the Bills show that they can figure out how to stop those powerful ground games, the Patriots win.
All right, I'm going to go right now. The Bills are the 7 seed. They're 8-6. I'm going to go Buffalo. I just don't see them. I don't see them getting swept by New England. There's we were talking about it last year, high end storyline stuff. Last year at this time, we were like, oh, it's the Buffalo Bills AFC East. It's all over. Listen, I mean, Belichick's come back and said, no, I'm rebuilding my roster. Found my rookie quarterback. We're back. Patriots are in this. This is awesome. With the division on the line, 9-5 Patriots, 8-6 Bills. It's going to be a lot of fun. Really fun game. I'm taking Buffalo.
Wow.
In the upset in New England. Because I think this game is going to be reliant more on the pass game. And I'm giving Josh Allen the advantage here.
PFF Greenline is on my side. They think there's a slight edge to the Patriots.
Greenline's really come along to liking the Patriots after not liking them as much this year. Working from early in the year, working from home is more important than ever. Optimize your home office with an X chair and our many accessories to enhance your focus, productivity, energy, and comfort. Once you feel the customized support of X chair's patented dynamic variable lumbar, there's no going back. That's the DVL. And it's all in the LMX massage and temperature regulation, exclusively designed and made for the X chair. Versatile comfort, extraordinary design. X chair fits any space. You also have high performance, quality engineering, extreme comfort, and the ability to put it together as quickly as I can, which is awesome. All reasons I love the X chair. You get back to work, and I love waking up, getting to work, sitting in my chair. And it's just beautiful. Could sit there for hours a day, nice and comfortable. And I love the massage and temperature regulation. That is my favorite part of my X chair. So you can see it on the YouTube channel here. You can get in there and customize it. You're going to do that at xchairnflpod.com. That's the letter X, chair, NFLPOD.com. Or call 1-844-4XCHAIR for $100 off your order. That's right. We're giving you $100 off. XChair is a 30-day guarantee of complete comfort, and you can finance your purchase for as little as $30 a month. XChairNFLPod.com. If you're watching on YouTube, check out the link in the description. All right, we got another Christmas game to discuss here. Cleveland Browns at the Green Bay Packers. It's Saturday, Christmas afternoon. Saturday, I just did a whole bunch of words in the wrong order. Saturday afternoon, Christmas Day, Packers are favored by 7.5. Packers are rolling right now. They are the darlings of the NFL, the best record in the NFL at 11-3. And the path to the number one seed is as easy as it's been for any team this year, right? I mean, the Packers now a game up on every other team in the NFC. They've got, and, you know, they have the tiebreakers and all that stuff. So the Packers in control in the NFC, and the Browns coming off of that. Come on, man. It's a fair question. You tweeting out to the people, are Moose festive?
Yeah.
It's a fair question.
It is.
Browns coming off a heartbreaking loss.
A COVID loss, yeah. The game that really potentially screwed up their entire season. It's hard not to be impressed by what the Packers have done this season. Like, there have been a few teams that have weathered setbacks very well this year. Arizona, I think, was one of them. The wheels have started to fall off that in the last couple of weeks. But Green Bay just keeps on going. They have been without three of their most important players basically all season long. You add Robert Tonyan to that, went down. They've been getting by fine. They lose the backup left tackle. You know, they haven't had Bakhtiari all season. He's still working his way back. Elton Jenkins was the guy filling in at left tackle. He goes down. They're now down to Josh Nyman at left tackle. Like, Jair Alexander still isn't back. Za'Darius Smith still isn't back. They have been missing some of their most important players. On offense, you know, it's been Aaron Rodgers to Devontae Adams for years, and the narrative has always been, where's the second threat? Where's the next guy? They need somebody else, because some teams are going to try and take away Devontae Adams and do a good job. And there's a bunch of screenshots out there of what the Ravens were trying to do to Devontae Adams, with literally, you know, stacked three guys on top of him running a design coverage. I forget what they named it. It was basically like, you know, take away Devontae on three, right? That was what they were doing. And it doesn't matter. Like, Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay offense still keeps on trucking. So given that they still expect to have at least two, probably three of those players back at some point. Bakhtiari isn't going to play. None of them are going to play this week. But Bakhtiari is working his way back. He's at practice. Jair Alexander is at practice. Za'Darius Smith is still not at practice, so he's the furthest away. But at some point, they expect to have those three guys back for the playoffs. Like, Green Bay's chance, I think, of the Super Bowl is as good as anybody. And this game becomes interesting for me on a specific matchup basis, because Josh Nyman has done a pretty good job at left tackle, even though you would have expected him to be a massive liability. Allowed 13 total pressures, solid pass blocking grade. All of a sudden, now you have to block Myles Garrett. So what does that do to that? Like, can you still keep your head above water when you're facing Myles Garrett, or does that become a problem all of a sudden?
I think with Rodgers at quarterback, though, if it's just one threat, it's okay, right? I mean, because how Myles Garrett's going to win, he's going to get to the edge a couple times, and Rodgers has generally a good feel in the pocket. He's going to step up, he's going to spin out, he's going to do what it takes to kind of avoid, and I think he'll have an idea. Rodgers is one of those guys, like the opposite of what we describe with Baker. Like, if Baker knows he's got a weakness on the offensive line, kind of crumble a little bit, let it get to him. I feel like Rodgers is like, I got a mismatch over here, I'm aware of it, and he'll just find a way to break the pocket and avoid sacks. And not that they won't get to Rodgers. Rodgers has a pretty high sack rate throughout the course of his career. But overall, you've called him a ninja in the pocket. Like, he's got a good feel, right, for where pressure's coming from, and he's going to be able to avoid that. It is a matchup to watch, though, if it's one of those, like, 10 pressure games.
Yeah.
That is one of those things that can change the course of the game here. Do we have any idea? Most of the Browns should be back, I think, at this point, right? Because most of the guys were on the list.
Yeah, Greg Newsom went on recently.
Right.
Pretty much everybody else has been on for a while. So Newsom went on yesterday, the 22nd. Jadeveon Clowney went on the 19th. Everybody else was on 18th or 17th or earlier. So they have a ton of guys, and important guys, Jedrick Wills, Jarvis Landry, John Johnson, Troy Hill. These are guys that should be back for this game. Baker, you know, their quarterback.
Yeah. So, look, I think the Browns, they got to play a great game. I mean, they have to play a great game overall. The Packers have done a nice job. They're not beating themselves. They're not turning the ball over. When they do turn to run the ball, I do think A.J. Dillon brings something to the table. He does bring that, you know, hammer to the table with him and Aaron Jones in the backfield. This is just the Packers. They're better rounded than they were last year, and you keep bringing up the point about they got some stars coming back, and they're better this year too because you have guys like Devondre Campbell stepping up and playing a great game, having a great season. He'll be important anytime you're playing a
Pro Bowl snub,
Devondre Campbell, and we're finally trying to give the guy credit. Right? People were trying to give him credit a couple years ago, and we're like, the grade's not great, but this year he's been all over the place. Linebackers are huge against this Browns defense because you have to tackle, you know, tough running backs like Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. You got to handle guards at the second level, one of the best offensive lines in the NFL, even though they're banged up. So Campbell's going to be a huge player in this, and then Rasul Douglas being that guy that keeps finding the ball. So Baker can't be lazy throwing against off coverage outside the numbers, because Rasul Douglas is jumping routes like better than any corner in the NFL this year.
Yeah. He's being hyper aggressive, and Eric Stokes has started to kind of, I don't want to say turn it around, because I don't think he was ever like massively struggling, but he was a little bit boom or bust earlier in the year. He's playing very well right now, and again, that I think is what really sets them up for when these guys start to get back, is the guys that they've had out there, you know, filling in for them, have been gaining legitimately valuable experience. They haven't been, like, sometimes when you have a backup in there playing for a superstar and he's just, I mean, he's what you're stuck with, but you don't anticipate, it's not helping anything, right? He's just the body that's in the position for a while. And then when you get the good guy back, he just takes a seat in the bench and you move on. But the Packers guys that they've had playing have, I think, been improving because of this play. Like, they're actually getting an improved depth for the future by virtue of the playing time that these guys have had to have been thrown into because of the missing players. So Eric Stokes getting this kind of experience as a number one corner for half the season, I think, is really useful for them, not just for the playoffs this year, but in the future.
Yeah, man, this is I think everything's looking good for the Packers, right? They're trending well. Aaron Rodgers getting all the MVP hype. I'm not necessarily on board with the Rodgers MVP case at the moment, because I think, you know, he's had a couple bad games in there too. People forgot about him because they happened earlier in the season.
There's no MVP this year. Throw it away.
There is no MVP. Don't give it to anybody. I mean, Rodgers is, he's not even, I don't think he's top 10 in our WAR metric at the moment. He's on the border with it. Because volume matters in there as well. Did miss a game. But Rodgers is playing awesome football right now. He's taking care of the ball, making those big-time throws. They're out. Marquez Valdes-Scantling is on the COVID list as well. He's just started to emerge a little bit again. And he's their best big play threat. So puts a little bit more pressure on the Allen Lazards of the world. And it is fascinating how the Packers are getting tight end production without Tonyan. Not that Tonyan was this great player. You could say he's the product of Rodgers in the system, but get Mercedes Lewis and Josiah DeGuara making plays.
I mean, the Mercedes Lewis thing is insane.
It's hilarious. He's just running through people, you know? Running through people at 37 years old at tight end. So.
Well, look, first round pick, that kind of talent, that kind of pedigree doesn't disappear.
Finally, this is the one first-round pick they've ever given Aaron Rodgers. They've never given him any playmakers.
Okay, it was a first-round pick back in 2006. But look, these are details.
Yeah. So
he ran a 4.8 back in 2006. What do you reckon he's running now?
Oh, gosh, yeah, that's right. I mean, he was did Martellus Bennett run something? I always think of them as very similar, like really good run blockers, more size. You know, they win with size and physicality more than speed. Bennett feels like he was a better athlete, but they're similar.
One of those players that didn't actually test that well, despite clearly being a freak?
I don't know.
We have Bennett listed as a 4.7 flat.
4.7. I mean, that's better than 4.8. But yeah, Lewis was that guy that just kind of like wins with size and all that stuff, but was never a dominant receiver. But this is like after the catch, he might be better after the catch at 37 than he was at 27, which is hilarious. Anyway, Green Bay by 7.5. I think they'll win. It's a lot of points, but I could see them covering that as well. So I'm gonna go with Green Bay here. I just like the way they're trending. How much are you going to lean on that Garrett matchup?
Well, Garrett, the other thing is that Garrett tweaked his groin in that game against the Raiders and is questionable. I think he'll still play on the basis that they desperately need him and he needs the game. So I think he'll play. I think he'll be a factor. I don't know that that'll be the determining thing. The Browns are getting the whole team back, basically, in theory. So I think when that happens, they're a better team than this kind of monster spread. So I think the Browns maybe keep it closer than 7.5. Is that what it is now?
Yeah, 7.5. So you're going to take Cleveland?
Yep.
To cover the 7.5? All right. Anyway, that's two of our top three games going to be on Christmas Day. They had talked about maybe moving games on Christmas earlier in the week, but I think seems like they're going to be fine. These games are going to go through. So
none of those are heavy COVID games, right?
Well, no. Cleveland's not anymore because I think most of their guys are back other than Greg Newsom, as you said. Speaking of Christmas, 'tis the season of giving, and DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, they're giving you a Christmas present you won't want to re-gift. New customers can bet just $5 on any of the four NFL teams playing on Christmas, the ones we just talked about, and you win $150 in free bets if they're victorious. Why not win some green and put some extra jingle in your pocket? If Sportsbook isn't yet available in your state, Christmas can still be merry. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes with DraftKings daily fantasy football contests, and DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code PFF. Bet just $5 on any team to win on Christmas Day. Any NFL team, all they have to do is win, and you win $150 in free bets if they're victorious. That's promo code PFF this Christmas at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Minimum $5 deposit, $1 wager required, one per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. All right, let's get to the rest of the slate. The Sunday games. Sunday Night Football. We got to put it toward the top of the show. Chris can't last the whole show here. But Washington at Dallas, that's his game. Sunday Night Football, Dallas favored by 10.5. Washington, they're coming off a tough loss against the Philadelphia Eagles. They got ravaged by COVID, and that certainly hurt their roster.
Single largest spread of the week.
This is the largest, huh?
Yeah.
And then Dallas, even though the offense hasn't been nearly as explosive over these last few weeks as they've shown earlier in the season, Dallas defense coming correct recently and really dominant. A few dominant games in there and some dominant player performances when you talk about what Micah Parsons and some of those defensive linemen are bringing to the table. So Dallas by 10.5 here on Sunday Night Football.
Yeah. Obviously, I mean, that was a last week basically cost Washington the playoffs. I don't know if they would have made it anyway, but that game being dropped to Philadelphia basically ruins their season, even if they'd ruined it themselves earlier in the year. The other thing it did is Washington had a really weird defensive game plan. We talked on the review show about how Philadelphia absolutely crushed them up front in the run game. Dominant run blocking performance by the Eagles. The defensive linemen for Washington got absolutely wrecked. Jonathan Allen, Daron Payne, those guys got destroyed by Philadelphia's run blocking. They also had a weird game plan in terms of, like, they were lightweight up front. They weren't just being controlled with what you would expect a normal box to look like against a power running team like Philadelphia, but they were matching up with heavy personnel sets by the Eagles with nickel defense and were like outgapped up front before the blocking started to take place. And then you have those guys crushing the defensive lineman for Washington, and now all hell is breaking loose and there's just gaps everywhere to run through. So, you know, Dallas is another one of those teams with a run-blocking offensive line that can take down pretty much anybody. They generally want to run the ball quite a lot anyway with Zeke and with Tony Pollard. And right now, taking the ball out of Dak's hands is probably not the worst idea in the world. So does Washington have a better plan than a week ago, or are they just going to get caved in again?
The number two run-blocking grade in the NFL, that's the Cowboys. And they're an answers team. They're an offense that has answers. That's my favorite way of looking at offenses, right? Can you handle all these different situations? And the Cowboys can do that. They can have games, as you said, where they rely on the line and the running game. It is different. It's just a different feel for the Cowboys this year, because if Dak played the way he has in recent weeks, you know, in previous years, or at least last year, Dallas didn't have a shot. But now they can rely on their defense a little bit, create a pass rush. They're very turnover driven, which means, okay, Taylor Heineke's back and he'll probably give you a couple opportunities, right? Give you a couple opportunities to turn it over. We'll see.
Who could tell?
I think, you know, Dallas is, they're the other team in the NFC that I think people are starting to feel really good about going into the playoffs, right? They were, as of a couple weeks ago, I was like, hey, maybe Dallas is vulnerable and the football team and the Eagles might, you know, sneak in the back door in at the division, but Dallas is, they've stepped up. They've won the games that they need to win. They're 10-4, currently the number two seed in the NFC. I expect them to take care of business against Washington once again. The entire NFC East playing all of their schedule in the last 4 weeks is just unbelievable, by the way. But
yeah,
it's hilarious.
But and it means that, like, those COVID games become even more, you know, valuable or devastating or destructive or determinative in terms of their each one of these teams' futures. Like, one of the reasons that the Washington, Philadelphia, these teams were all still in the playoff hunt is because they play each other at the end of the year. And if either one of them goes on a run of knocking off the other teams in the division, they can jump back into the playoffs and could even, up until recently, were even still in sight of the division lead. Washington get ravaged by COVID, you drop the game to Philadelphia, and all of a sudden you essentially swap places with the Eagles, who are now the team that has a shot at the playoffs, and you're done. Ultimately, I think, like, that game a week ago, yes, COVID was a massive problem, but it wasn't. COVID didn't explain the weird defensive game plan and how you just got blown off the ball. And Dallas, I think, can replicate what the Eagles did. But in addition to that, they have all those receiving weapons, and Dak Prescott is a much better quarterback, even playing slightly questionably right now, than Jalen Hurts is. So, yeah, it's hard to see how Washington doesn't get kind of wrecked in this one.
Remember how early in the season we were saying Washington's defense doesn't make any sense?
Yeah.
Here's another point where they don't make any sense. If you do have premium stats, you go check out the Washington page. And if you don't have it, by the way, you get 25% off using promo code NFLPOD. But go look at Washington's page and check out their pass rush grades and their coverage grades. And early in the season, pass rush is all green, coverage is all orange and red, bad. That has flipped in recent weeks. Now you've got Chase Young got hurt. I mean, pretty much since Chase Young got hurt, the pass rush has been far worse. Montez Sweat was out for a while. So they lost a lot of depth up front. But the back seven has started to play a lot better. Now, they played the Panthers in there, but they had some good games. They played well against the Bucs. They played well against Russ and the Seahawks. They played well against the Raiders. Was it Russ or was that Geno? I forget. Either way, they played well in certain games. And the secondary's been much better in recent weeks than they were earlier in the year, but they're not getting that same path. They just have not had the entire defense working together at any point this year, like they did last year when Washington had a top three defense in the NFL. We expected regression, but it's just odd how it's been so disconnected this year.
Yeah, and I know, you know, they only played a couple of weeks ago, and it was a seven-point game, but Dallas should have had that way out of sight.
I mean, Dak let them back in.
Right, Dak Prescott with a pick six tries to sort of make it a game towards the end, but Dallas should have been so far out of sight in that game. So I think a repeat is in order.
Yeah, I think Dallas, I think they win. I think they roll. Do they roll by 10.5?
Yes. Yes, they do.
I agree. I think they do. Sorry, Chris. I don't know if it's going to be a close game.
If you're interested, the people believe the Moose are festive.
Yeah.
So far, the poll is 88% say they're festive.
Thank
moose.
You. Anything with antlers. It's just if you have antlers.
Anything with antlers.
Anything with antlers is Christmassy and festive. So. And you throw the tree in there, and it's like, I'm wearing a Christmas sweater. It is official.
All right.
All right, Baltimore Ravens at the Cincinnati Bengals. Bengals favored by 3. That's your AFC North division leading Bengals. Because they got the tiebreaker over the Ravens. I don't know if you know. If they win this, they certainly will have the tiebreaker over the Ravens because they'll have swept Baltimore. Lamar Jackson has, what are they calling it? It was an ankle sprain, but they're calling it ankle bruise, lower leg bruise? Is that what they're calling it?
I just knew he had an ankle sprain. I didn't know there was anything more to it.
They're getting more technical.
Huh.
It's not a high or a low ankle. It's a bone bruise.
Have they given you an indication as to which way it turned?
I don't know. The bone bruise can happen on either side.
It can.
So, I don't know.
I mean, also, you haven't even talked about, you know, forward or backwards. I mean, there's a whole other axis of injuries you could be experiencing.
There
on the
is. There's so many different planes of pain that you can experience in your ankle.
Mm-hmm.
So, what are you looking for in this game? Bengals favored by 3. Who would have thunk?
Who'd have thunk it? I mean, the Ravens have been kind of, they've just been so wrecked by injuries now. The thing that determined this game the first time around was basically Ja'Marr Chase. Now, what's interesting there is that, one, Ja'Marr Chase has stopped making those kinds of plays generally. Earlier in the season, remember, everything that was sent his way was incredible. It was like he had the receiver Midas touch. When a ball went in the air towards Ja'Marr Chase, good things happened, including against Baltimore. Now, or since then, that's cooled off. Things have started to go badly sometimes when you throw the ball in his direction. But at the same time, Baltimore secondary has continued to just lose bodies and get completely decimated. So they couldn't keep Ja'Marr Chase under wraps when they had some players in the secondary. Marlon Humphrey was going up against him a lot in that game, and he was getting torched. They don't have that anymore. So which one wins out? Is it the fact that Ja'Marr Chase has regressed and isn't making the same kind of plays he was early in the season? Or does that matter because Baltimore just doesn't have the horses to match up with him anyway? So, you know, we saw last week that they were prepared to completely manipulate their coverages to try and take away one guy, but that was when the secondary threats are a lot less significant. Now, if you try and do that, Cincinnati has weapons. Like, they have T. Higgins, they have Tyler Boyd. I don't know if you can give Ja'Marr Chase the kind of treatment you gave Davante Adams. So that whole dynamic, I think, is a really interesting one to watch.
So last week, I tweeted it out and talked about it. Baltimore, with their depleted secondary, they didn't look like they had a chance against the Packers, right? I mean, it's just Rodgers and They did what they could, put the three people on Devontae Adams.
Right.
But they couldn't really stop Allen Lazard, or they couldn't stop Valdes-Scantling and all that stuff. And we've also talked about the Bengals doing what they can. Like they love having games where Joe Burrow only has to drop back 25 or 30 times. They've tried to achieve that in many ways. I think this is the game you put it in Burrow's hands, left and right, right? Just say...
Every game is that game.
I know, but this one...
Hamstringing the man.
Yeah, but this game in particular, man, like, it's... Anthony Averett's the most experienced guy back there. Kevon Seymour might have more experience, but Tavon Young was banged up a little bit last week. Brandon Stevens, Anthony Levine, I mean, they're just... They're beat up, man.
Yeah.
They're completely beat up, and it's like, just, we're going to put the ball in Burrow's hands and say, T. Higgins has been excellent the second half of the season. Go cover him. Go cover all those guys. This should be a Joe Burrow game in Cincinnati. A lot of people think we're like a hometown. They think we're biased to the Bengals. Like we were born and raised in Cincinnati and just diehard Bengals fans and all that stuff. It's funny. We're not. You're from Ireland.
Correct.
By the way.
Yeah.
But the hometown Bengals, man, hosting a game to win.
Maybe it's you saying the hometown Bengals.
I do it in jest. It's fun. I mean, I embrace my hometown now. I love Cincinnati.
What do you make of Joe Burrow's comments?
It's not a lot to do
in Cincinnati, so people aren't catching COVID.
I would never criticize my city. I don't care for Cincinnati nightlife either. I don't go out, so I don't know.
So you agree with him?
I don't go out. I wouldn't choose to go out whether I was in Vegas or not, so it doesn't matter. I mean, dude, go to Jeff Ruby's all the time. Go to Jeff Ruby's.
I see.
You can catch COVID at Jeff Ruby's. That's something to do.
That doesn't feel like a great
I'm not saying go catch COVID at Jeff Ruby's. I'm saying you can catch it at any indoor establishment, and Jeff Ruby's is a place that I would choose to go out to go to here.
I'm not sure you're the guy we want reading the ads anymore.
What do you mean? If you're looking for COVID, you can go to Jeff Ruby. You can go to Jeff Ruby's downtown. You can go to the precinct. You can go anywhere.
Please only sue him, not me. I don't want any part of that.
There's not a ton to do in Cincinnati.
Hmm.
I mean, yeah.
He's not wrong.
I guess. Like, where does Cincinnati rank?
It's not the most bumping nightlife city in the world.
Maybe you should get in your playbook, man, instead of going out.
I mean, he is.
Yeah.
Apparently, because there's nothing else to do.
So no comment.
Okay, that's our official party line.
Go get COVID at Skyline.
Stop getting sued by everybody.
Where are you leaning in this game? What are you looking for? If Lamar's back, I think that changes a lot. As great as Tyler Huntley played last week, do you trust him to do that again? I don't know.
I don't trust him to do that again, but do you trust Lamar to do that at this point? Like, when was the last time Lamar played well?
Look, even though I was making Carson Wentz comparisons
Pro
to the
Lamar,
flow,
that is.
Yes, I know. The flow of Lamar's career, looking like Carson Wentz and all that stuff.
I mean, clearly he has
I would expect Lamar to get back on track at some point here.
Clearly he has a much higher ceiling and is a much more devastating threat than Tyler Huntley. But the last time Lamar actually played very well in a game is going back a fair way at this point. And that's part of the reason that Baltimore has been struggling. Yes, everything else has been disintegrating around him, but Lamar has not sort of held up his end of the bargain either. And the fact that they were able to put in Tyler Huntley and the thing didn't look much different, I think is significant. Now, it doesn't mean that'll happen every week if you're forced to live off Tyler Huntley for a while. But the point is more that Lamar Jackson hasn't been playing at a level higher than that for a while, whereas Joe Burrow absolutely has been. So I'm going to go with the Bengals, even though they're favored by 3.
I'm going with the Bengals as well, because I think, look, I'm a homer, and I just think the matchup here, Burrow and his pass catchers against the Ravens secondary, is going to be too much. And I think the Bengals lean into that. They should lean into it. They put up a ton of points, and it's going to be tough for Baltimore to hang. I think Baltimore's, much like Tennessee, I think all the injuries are just starting to catch up and be too much for them to overcome.
The biggest thing in Baltimore's favor is Cincinnati's refusal to put the ball in the hands of their best player and just adopt that game plan. Like, they are going to, that despite the fact that there's a giant bullseye on the entire Ravens secondary, they're going to go out there and 55% of first downs are going to be runs up the middle to Joe Mixon.
Put it in Burrow's hands, man. Go get him. our other friends here at Cincinnati, Western and Southern. Want a chance to win the ultimate game day feast? Whether it's football success or financial savvy, winning starts with asking us questions. Would you like to know what it's like behind the scenes with Al on Sunday Night Football? It's actually ask questions about Al out to dinner. That's what I would suggest here, because I've heard some fun ones. How about a need to know on your financial future? Western Southern is teaming up with PFF's very own Chris Collinsworth to share insights that can help put you ahead on both your fantasy and financial scoreboards. Every submission earns you a chance to win the ultimate feast to celebrate football's favorite Sunday. We'll cover your catering up to $2,500, coordinate your order from a restaurant near you, and have it delivered on February 13th, 2022. It's a big day. It's a big day with a big game. That's how you have to talk about those games for whatever reason. For
legal technicalities.
Legal purposes here. Don't forget to check out the Chris Collinsworth podcast and Western Southern's Instagram for answers to the best questions each week. So submit your questions at westernsouthern.com/askchris. By the way, you spell Chris C-R-I-S. There's no H.
Correct.
How many times is Chris with an H trending on Twitter? Probably happens a lot.
I don't know.
One more time, that's westernsouthern.com/askchris. If you're watching on YouTube, check out the link in the description below. Remember, Western Southern, you can rest assured on game day. All right, next game to break down here, Los Angeles Rams at the Minnesota Vikings. That's another fun one. We got the Rams favored by 3 on the road in Minnesota. What are you looking for in this game?
Do the Rams put Jalen Ramsey on Justin Jefferson all game? Do they try and take him away that way? They don't. So Justin Jefferson doesn't play that much in the slot, about a third of his snaps. Jalen Ramsey this year plays mostly in the slot, so they would need to sort of flip that. It's not the most natural matchup in the world, unless you're specifically going in there with the game plan of making that happen. The Vikings at this point don't have much of a threat outside of Justin Jefferson, so it would be the thing that you wanted to do if you were trying to take something away. But do they want to do it with Jalen Ramsey one-on-one, or do they want to try and do it with the defensive shell overall?
Yeah, this is, man, I want to see that matchup. I really want to see that one-on-one a lot. What's Thielen's status here?
He is encouraged by his sort of the speed with which he is recovering, but is still questionable with that.
I think we're starting to see, when you start to lose depth, I feel like you can make do a week, you know, a game at a time or whatever it might be. It does add up after a while. I felt that a little bit with the Vikings the other night. Like, they should... I'm over here talking about the Bengals have the depth to attack the Bears' depleted secondary. That's what the Ravens' depleted secondary. Right. On Monday night, the Vikings should have been able to do that, right? Attack the Bears' ravaged secondary, and they couldn't do it. And I wonder if that's just because, look, they didn't have Thielen. They didn't have that second option, and you can't always just force it to Justin Jefferson. So I do think the depth or lack of depth might catch up to Minnesota here. As great as K.J. Osgood's been this season, and he's emerged as a three and all that stuff, you know, maybe that catches up a little bit too much. The other part here, the Rams have a really good run defense. You have Aaron Donald always disrupting things. Leonard Floyd, Von Miller on the edge. The front is excellent. Greg Gaines playing really good football for the Rams this year. Minnesota hates that. They want to run. They want to run. They still want to run. Is this one of the Cousins? Do you put it in Cousins' hands? Do you put it in his hands and say, we can't run the ball all that effectively against the Rams unless Aaron Donald, you know, overshoots a gap every now and again? Is this a Cousins game where you have to put it in his hands?
Maybe, but that comes with its own risk, because like Aaron Donald has quietly been on quite the ridiculous tear in recent weeks. It was a relatively quiet year for him up until the sort of last month, and then he's exploded and sort of reminded people that he's actually a freaking dominant player, like the best player in the NFL, period. Now, look at who it's come against, right? Jacksonville's offensive line, Arizona's offensive line, Seattle's offensive line. They are teams that you would expect Aaron Donald to kind of rip through, and he has, but this is where it becomes relevant, because the Minnesota Vikings, their offensive line remains forever in flux. Particularly right guard is a problem spot for them. They've cycled through a few players. They got rid of the issues from last year, but even this year, they've Ole Udo, they've had Mason Cole there. They haven't necessarily been able to nail down that spot. Donald should be able to win that one-on-one matchup every single time if he's there. The left side is more interesting. Ezra Cleveland has played okay this year, but again, like, it's Ezra Cleveland versus Aaron Donald, that should be a win for Donald as well. So whatever you want to do, whether you want to run your outside zone plays and watch Donald knife 5 yards into the backfield, or whether you're dropping back to pass and it's Aaron Donald one-on-one against those guys. I mean, it sounds it's self-evident and stupid, and it's years in the making, but like, what is your game plan to stop Aaron Donald? Because otherwise, he is capable of wrecking your entire offense on his own. Like, Akeem Hicks.
You can run power away from him, and he can't be a factor. But they don't run power. So.
Yeah. I mean, Akeem Hicks did a pretty good job of single-handedly wrecking the Vikings offense last week. And Akeem Hicks is like a shadow of Akeem Hicks, let alone a shadow of Aaron Donald. So, again, like, you need a plan.
And then defensively, what's the plan to stop Cooper Kupp? He continues to tear it up. He's been awesome after the catch. He's been awesome down the field. Him and Stafford have a great connection. Stafford playing much better football in recent weeks after his little midseason slump. So Rams are looking better. I think they're answering some of those questions too, right? We thought the narrative would be they'd have this peak and then they drop off and McVay can't adjust and all that stuff. They've been better, not great. They've been a little better in recent weeks. And look, I don't think they were great against Seattle, but Stafford made the big-time throws that they needed to win the game. So Cooper Kupp on one side, Justin Jefferson on the other. That's all a great storyline. But I like the way the Rams are trending here. You mentioned Aaron Donald's ability to take over the game. We're starting to see that star power on the Rams side, I think, really step up. On the defensive side, at least.
Yeah, if they figure out how to neutralize Justin Jefferson, it's tough to see how the Vikings win this.
Kirk Cousins trending in the wrong direction in recent weeks, too. We had mentioned like he was up near the top of the grading for a while. And was he going to just regress back into what he was previously, or had he turned? He's got 4 of his last 5 games have been graded at 65 or below. So that, to me, feels more like just a regression to the Cousins, more than anything.
That just sound you made, I think, is a very Kirk Cousins sound. Cousins, that was kind of, that's it. It's like, yeah, look, for as well as Kirk Cousins plays for long stretches of time, everybody's always waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Yeah.
Always, including his own team. Like, everybody. Everybody is aware at this point that there's like a statute of limitations on good Kirk play. Eventually, you're going to get average Kirk play. When you have that, unless you have an amazing team around him, and the Vikings just don't anymore, you're going to struggle. So, it's not like he's played badly in recent weeks, just that he hasn't played as well as he played earlier in the year.
And right.
They need more than that. Like, they need Kirk Cousins to be playing amazingly for them to be winning games. But the crazy thing is that when you look at their record, it hasn't made much of a difference. Like, they're bouncing around 500 either way. They're winning these 2 games, losing 2 games, winning 2 games, back to back to back. This is who the Vikings are. They're trapped in this world of, like, 500.
And they're coming off a game where they probably should have ran away from the Bears, but they didn't. Kept letting the back in, made a bunch of red zone stops. This is the game where the Vikings are going to look like the most dangerous team that you don't want to play in the playoffs, because they're going to give the Rams a great game and it's going to be awesome. It's going to be like 33-30 or something like that, right? It's going to be a fun game. I'm taking the Rams to cover the 3, though, on the road here in Minnesota.
So am I. Interestingly, Green Line is the other way. They think there's an edge. It thinks there's an edge towards the Vikings covering that number. And I'm not entirely sure why. Like, there doesn't appear to be a data point that backs that up.
Eric wouldn't let that do if he was doing it by hand. So something's wrong with the algorithm here, obviously. We're both taking the Rams to cover this thing?
Yeah.
All right. Trust Green Line, though. Right? PFF Elite.
Which believes the Rams have the number 1 defense and the Vikings are 13th. Which believes the Rams have the number 6 offense and the Vikings are 12th. Yeah, it's tough to find out why. I'm not. All right.
Home field advantage, Minnesota?
Dude, very strong home field advantage.
Denver Broncos at the Las Vegas Raiders. Raiders favored by 1 here. I believe we're going to see Drew Locke for Denver, right?
Praise the Lord.
I don't think
it's a Christmas miracle.
Yeah. So Drew Locke versus Derek Carr. I think Derek Carr's future with the Raiders is an interesting one here. So I was on with our friend Matthew Collar. He covers the Vikings, and we were talking about Cousins and this whole thing. And he makes a lot of those same noises when he talks about Cousins too, right? And this is I call them the tier 3 quarterback noises. Right, you've got this mid-level quarterback, and it's like, he does some good things, and but what about?
You could sum those entire all those players up in just those noises.
Yeah,
you know.
I mean, that honestly, that's been Stafford's career too. Stafford's just in the nice. He's in the best situation right now.
Yeah.
So the stats are better.
I mean, people lost. So this was getting thrown back at me earlier in the season when Stafford, you know, was on the run to start the year of insane numbers and all these kinds of things. Like earlier in the offseason, I can't remember who it was. Somebody was. It was Stafford versus somebody else. Maybe it was Stafford versus Rodgers. That was the discussion in the offseason. And I was like, you know, quietly, Kirk Cousins has been a much better quarterback over the past few years than Stafford. And, you know, people were losing their minds and was like throwing that back at me earlier in the season. Like, hey, what do you think now, idiot, now that he's, you know, with the Rams and not with the Detroit Lions? Like, well, he's kind of regressed back to being Kirk Cousins again, but in a better offense.
I mean,
like, Cousins has a better grade right now, right?
Yeah. And you just say, you're making my point. Also, people look at the Lions. If you only look at the Lions from a win-loss standpoint, yeah, like he was with the Lions. And if you were judging him by wins and losses, you'd say poor Stafford. If you're judging him by what he actually had and what
right,
he's
like
been throwing
Megatron
to.
And a good offensive line. And,
right. He had a guy who was so good, he only had to play like 7 years to get into the Hall of Fame. That's Calvin Johnson.
Yes.
Right? He had an awesome supporting cast of pass catchers these last couple years. Did he have a run game? No. My point was the Cousins, it's like that whole meme, like, I think, you know, maybe, whatever.
We just need a whole, like, clip of, you know, the Kirk Cousins and then the noises that describe
the
him.
The noises. Get a voice crack in there every now and again when you're changing a play. My point in all this is Derek Carr elicits the same noises.
Most of the time. Sometimes.
I think. Like, you know, early in the season. You mentioned it. Is there anything more noise-driven than I threw a game-ending interception, but, oh, I got another opportunity. Now I led a game-winning drive.
Got it
like
back.
That all happened on back-to-back drives by Derek Carr.
That's the great thing about that, right? When people pull up those numbers, like game-winning drives, it's just a binary thing, yes or no. Like, so that one, simply a yes.
Yes.
He won the game. The fact that he tried to throw it away a minute earlier is irrelevant and doesn't get captured by that. He won the game.
Look, again, like a lot of stats, I think those things get you in the ballpark over time. And Carr's been pretty good in those situations. You have to have a lot of opportunities in those situations. Carr has had a lot of opportunities. Stafford has had a lot of opportunities because you're losing a lot of games, right?
Yeah.
If you're a 500-ish
quarterback, this is the big thing at that,
you have
right?
more opportunities.
Like the game-winning drive thing, like you don't get too many of those when you're ahead by 15 every play. Like Tom Brady hasn't had an awful lot of game-winning drive opportunities down the years, because he's been ahead by 10 points in the fourth quarter most of the time.
But we, you know, there's stats out there too that isolate the opportunities too, and Brady's like the only QB in history that's over 500 in those particular instances. So those do kind of, over time, that's what I'm saying, like they get you in the ballpark. So Carr, earlier in this year, one of our highest graded quarterbacks, he's got a ton of big time throws, he's doing great.
Does he still lead the league in big time throws?
He might be up there still.
He does.
He's slowed down a touch, but Carr's regression, dependent, you know, statistically, dependent a little bit on Darren Waller, dependent on the Henry Ruggs situation and all that stuff. But what is Carr's future with the Raiders is what I want to see over these last few games. Like, not that it is determined here, but you know there's going to be a new regime. We've seen other teams around the league, the Rams last year with Goff, the 49ers with Jimmy Garoppolo say, yeah, you're good, but I want something better.
Yeah.
Are the Raiders going to be in that position at the end of this year? Or is Derek Carr the inflection point, you know, the new inflection point where you just, you can't get rid of a Derek Carr. You want that guy.
I mean, if you're ever going to do it, now's the time, right? Now that John Gruden was kicked to the curb and you have this sort of, you have this potential reset opportunity. I don't know if they're keeping Mike Mayock or if he's going to be the guy that leads this new direction, but now is the time to press the reset button and reboot this whole thing from scratch. But maybe they do think that Derek Carr is part of that whole rebuild and that he can be that quarterback with the right situation. And to be fair, there's evidence that says he can. Like earlier in the year, he was playing fantastically when he had the deep threat and he had Darren Waller and he had an offensive line that wasn't completely capitulating under any sort of pressure whatsoever. Derek Carr was one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL earlier this season. So I think there is an argument that says he's capable of doing that, which is a similar argument to the Kirk Cousins one, right? If the situation around Kirk Cousins is amazing, he's good enough to play really, really well. But I think the difference between those two guys is when the situation isn't great. Not that every quarterback in the league is obviously affected by situation, but I think some are capable of doing more with less. And I don't know that Carr or Cousins fit into that category.
And this is, you know, the tale of an NFL season. The last time they played in week six, Carr was playing really well. He has his highest graded game as a passer against the Broncos. He had only 18 completions for 341 yards. That was when Henry Ruggs had 97 yards on three catches and Waller was healthy and out there and all that stuff. So it was a different world, I think, back then, way back in week six. It just kind of shows how often things change a little bit. So I think it's a Waller's still questionable, non-participant in Wednesday's practice. I think he's been questionable for every single practice, so I really don't know what to make of that.
Yeah.
I think this is, you know, the Raiders have to get the run game going a little bit more than they have this year because that's just the way the roster's trending.
But they're trying to, like, they're trying to run the ball. Their issue is that the offensive line stinks, and whether you're trying to run it or pass it, you're going to have some problems. Like, Alex Leatherwood is one of the worst offensive linemen in the NFL this year. Having said that, he's coming off a good game. But this is the thing. Like, I think the Raiders believe that the offensive line is so bad, we need to protect Derek Carr by running the ball more. But the reason, like, that problem is the same when you try and run the ball. That just means that instead of Derek Carr being under pressure and getting hit, Josh Jacobs is running into a brick wall. Like, either way, the play is negative. You know what I mean?
55 pressures given up by Alex Leatherwood with only four of those games are at right tackle. But, man, that is – when you're giving up four, five, and six pressure games and a nine-pressure game against Kansas City, when you're giving up those types of numbers at guard, that is rough. So Leatherwood has a tough transition to the NFL. Drew Lock, the full experience, was on display on Sunday. The, again, jump ball touchdown, got stripped at the goal line. So I don't know what to do.
Of the football,
not of his clothes.
No.
So where are you going in this particular game? Vegas by one.
If Teddy was the quarterback, I think you would be leaning Denver. Drew Lock just opens up a much broader spectrum of things that can happen in this game. It could be good. You might get a game where Drew Lock puts it together in a relative sense, hits a couple of big plays, somehow doesn't make a massive mistake, and all of a sudden the Raiders' problems are too big to overcome, I think. Alternatively, you get a game that probably features some pretty significant Drew Lock mistakes. And if that happens, that swings everything back towards the Raiders.
I think Drew Lock's the guy you just don't bet on.
You just don't bet on Drew Lock.
But you don't want to bet against him either.
No. So let's settle this the old-fashioned way with a coin flip.
Oh, I was just going to take Vegas.
Will you do that? Okay. Heads,
so you're going to go...
Heads, Drew Lock makes catastrophic mistakes, and the Raiders win and cover. Tails...
Heads, Raiders.
Drew Lock has a clean game.
Tails, Broncos.
Good. Tails. Good game from Drew Lock.
Wow. Big Drew Lock.
This is science.
Impressive. On the road, at Vegas. It's huge. Good for Drew Lock.
Mm-hmm.
He's coming back, baby.
This is why they should have gone with him to start the season.
Maybe that's how they did it. Teddy won the coin toss.
Flipped a coin.
Yeah. Pittsburgh Steelers at the Kansas City Chiefs. Chiefs are favored by 7.5 as of right now. They also have a lot of players on the COVID list.
And not just a lot, but important.
So Chris Jones should be back, right?
Yeah, because
he missed the Thursday night game last week. So he should be back by now. But Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce are both on the list right now. They still have a chance to test out. But we've always thought, hypothetically, what would Patrick Mahomes look like without Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce?
And you might find out.
You might find out in a one-game sample here. The COVID list is strong. Most people are listed as out. So Tyreek Hill's listed as... out on ESPN.com right now. Kelsey's listed as out.
The chaotic thing about this is it isn't just, like, the list is one thing, but remember, like, vaccination status determines how quickly you can come back.
Everybody on their COVID list is listed as out right now, though.
Right, but that might not, I mean, I don't know if that's how ESPN lists them.
I don't know what the protocol is there.
So for the
Lucas Niang, Kyle Long, Nick Bolton, Rashad Fenton, Blake Bell, Harrison Butker.
The critical players, obviously, are Kelce and Tyreek Hill. I mean, this has been the discussion, right, that the Kansas City Chiefs are too top-heavy. And if you can figure out a way of taking those guys away in-game, they don't have enough to win outside of those two. What happens if you just take them out of the game, like, completely, and say, now you don't even have those guys on the field as options. How do you win with Mecole Hardman and friends? Like,
so
that...
I would say
really fascinating.
I would say at least knowing they're out is an advantage for the Chiefs. There's a difference between they're on the field and then you have to get to your third and fourth option on a given play. I think the going into a game knowing that you're relying on Hardman or you're relying on Byron Pringle, at least knowing that going in, you can game plan for it, right? And I think that's the one advantage. So you're looking at DeMarcus Robinson, Josh Gordon, Byron Pringle, Hardman, who you mentioned, the run game, which again, you know, as of a couple weeks ago, that was the strength of the Chiefs, was, you know, run blocking up front with that offensive line, and maybe they have to do that against the Steelers team that gave up another 200 yards on the ground last week against the Titans. Like, they, in the 1 week removed from getting destroyed by the Vikings, this could actually be a game where Mahomes is going run, run, pass quite
really
a bit.
Be.
Yeah, because they could, you know, maybe take advantage of the Steelers up front.
If they're prepared to do that, that is the best way they're set up right now.
That would be interesting. And then you just get Mahomes working play action off of that, and you get this completely different looking Kansas City offense. So, not rooting for any of these, you know, COVID cases or people to miss games. It is just an interesting storyline that you get to see two of the most uncoverable players for the Chiefs, and it's like, all right, Mahomes, go do it on your own without those guys. It'll be a challenge. I think he steps up and does it, though. I've been the one that's as critical as anyone who thinks, yeah, I think Tyreek and Kelsey have made Mahomes' early career stats look incredible.
Yeah.
But I also think Mahomes is awesome, and I think he could, you know, step up and ball out here.
And they, like, Pittsburgh's defense got a lot of credit last week for what they did in winning the game, essentially, against Tennessee. Like, they did play well, and they made some plays, but Tennessee also kind of imploded with some of those turnovers, and some of them were kind of freaky. Like, the one to the guy, was it the tight end on a shallow crossing route where he kind of got a hit, and then the ball just sort of bounced up weirdly out of the back of his arm into the, and then Minkah Fitzpatrick dives to snag it. Like, that's one of those weird plays that it happens. It was great, but it's not repeatable. Like, that's just a weird bounce of the ball. If Pittsburgh doesn't have, like, a couple of those plays where they turn the ball over, it's tough to see if their defense can have the kind of impact that it needs to have, because different to a year ago, their defense isn't suffocating. It's not dominant on a, you know, across the board basis. It's relying on those games where TJ Watt turns up and has a really dominant outing, and, you know, maybe gets a strip sack or two, or has some really big negative plays in there, or they get a few turnovers and they force teams into problems that way. If they don't get those big plays, they're not the kind of defense they were a year ago.
And then offensively, Pittsburgh still not moving the ball very effectively, run game or pass game. They do have those moments, right? Like in the Minnesota game a couple weeks ago where they put the ball in Ben's hands and he chucks it down the field and makes some throws. I will repeat for the 900th time this year the ugliness of what that could look like, but the potential payout of when you do connect on some of those passes. Problem is, the Chiefs do a really good job. I mean, they're gonna zero blitz Big Ben, who can't move, an offensive line that can't really pass protect, Chris Jones, who can't be blocked. I mean, it could be ugly on that side of the ball,
yeah,
too. So I think we might be looking at a low-scoring game on both sides. But I think for Pittsburgh to win, you have to have a little bit of that big retro Big Ben, make a few big-time throws in there, get the ball to your playmakers. I don't know if Kansas City is going to do it. I don't know if they're going to try to slow the game down a little bit and run it. But I think they need to still be aggressive, even without Kansas City having their top two playmakers.
I also think that this is the first defense in a while that's going to throw a game plan at Kansas City's offense that isn't just a gimme, right? I think that is still an open question. What happens when Kansas City's offense faces those defenses that have caused them problems with those two high looks? Now, Pittsburgh mixes up their coverages a lot. They will show a bunch of different coverages. I would imagine they will show more of those two high looks than the Chargers or the Raiders have done, which, remember, is basically the sum totality of Kansas City's offense being fixed. Bouncing back is the Raiders twice and the Chargers, who didn't like run like a snap of too high. They ran it a couple of times and swung away from it, like rolled safeties away from it. So if we just see a defense that shows them that again, we still don't know if this offense is back, even if they did have Kelsey and Hill. So there's a lot of things that would say this is a big number to be putting out there, given what we're talking about with Kansas City.
Now I want to talk myself back into it. You got TJ Watt. He's battled a groin injury, but he's still out there, right? I'm losing track of everybody's injuries. But TJ Watt against Andrew Wiley, the backup right tackle, potentially, yeah, with Niang listed as out at the moment. That could be a massive mismatch. You still have Cameron Hayward playing some really good football. So the Steelers have a chance from a pass rush standpoint to get after Mahomes. Maybe Mahomes doesn't have his favorite outlets. You don't have the cheat code plays from Tyreek Hill in this one. It's going to be a tough one. I'm kind of leaning on I think I'm leaning on Mahomes just kind of stepping up. And even though the data hasn't said he has been great this year, I still think he's a great player that just elevates his game in this particular one and brings the Byron Pringles and DeMarcus Robinsons of the world to the promised land.
Man, DeMarcus Robinson. I can't.
And no. His 49.9 grade.
You brought that up. That does it for me.
Oh, you're going Pittsburgh, huh?
I can't.
You're going Pitt.
I can't hitch my wagon to an offense that's led by DeMarcus Robinson. I can't do it.
You're going to hitch your wagon to an offense that's led by Ben Roethlisberger?
Yes.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Big wagon.
Chicago Bears at the Seattle Seahawks. We're going to fly through the rest of these games here. One thing to watch in the rest of these games, because a lot of them have they're not as good. They're not as good the rest of the games. How about that? Chicago Bears at the Seattle Seahawks. Seahawks -6.5 here at home.
I mean, obviously, Justin Fields is always the thing to watch for Chicago. I'm also kind of curious to see, do any of those guys from the makeshift secondary, like the backup secondary, do they stick off the back of that ridiculously good game?
Thomas Graham, baby.
Right. Like, does Thomas Graham earn himself playing time based off that? Because he should. He's a guy I think that a lot of people liked relative to his draft stock anyway, and then had that kind of debut. If you're Chicago, can you put that guy back in the bench and say, thanks, Thomas, good fill-in session, but now, you know, see ya.
Carlos Dunlap for Seattle, getting after Justin Fields from a pass rush standpoint. He can have another 3 sacks.
No.
Seattle's done a pretty good job of taking away the deep ball. I don't think their defense has been great this year, but they have played a style that has prevented big plays, you know, encouraged underneath passing, encouraged patience from the quarterback. So I think that's the Justin Fields thing to take a look at here. Will he play in rhythm, get rid of the ball, get the ball to his playmakers underneath? Because Fields has been a big-time throw-driven quarterback, a lot like Russ, right, where it's you're relying on those chunk plays. Seattle does a pretty good job of preventing them, so playing a patient game underneath. And then what the heck is Russell Wilson? Still trying to figure that out. Like, I wanted to make the finger excuse for a while, and I thought there was a clear line in the sand between pre-finger injury and post-mallet finger and all that stuff. Last week was pretty bad but it was throwing the ball plus decisions with Russell Wilson.
The Seahawks defense, I think, is a good one for Justin Fields to have. Like, don't you remember the way the Vikings played at the end of that game where they played a little soft? They kind of gave him some time to work with and just let him re-diagnose and fire the ball where it needs to go, much like he did at Ohio State. And all of a sudden, when you do that, Justin Fields can deal. Seattle, I think, is they play that kind of defense to begin with, let alone, right, you know, late in the fourth quarter where you're just trying to chew clock. Only the Atlanta Falcons, who are miserable at generating pressure this year, and the Detroit Lions have a lower pressure rate than the Seahawks this season. So in theory, even with a banged up offensive line, Justin Fields should have some time to work. And if that happens, like, that's where you see what he's capable of.
Good news. We are aware of the leak in the green room. Help is on the way.
Excellent.
So hopefully the fire hazard from the green room will be taken care of.
I mean, fire hazard. Yeah. Man.
You found what? What did you find in there?
There was water in the light bulb. Like, within the glass structure of the light bulb.
How did it get there?
I mean, I assume it leaked through the interior of the fitting.
Was Renner here partying last night again, or something went?
I mean, who knows?
But I just wanted to make sure you knew, even here on it. Oh, we've got a picture.
Oh, look, there you go.
The water accumulating in the light bulb.
I mean, look, for all I know, somebody unscrewed the light bulb, filled it up with water, and put it back on there. But
should we make sure that it's off? Should it not be on?
I mean, look, if the power goes out, the power goes out. Let's just keep doing the podcast.
We've made it this far, so.
That's what I'm saying.
All I know is Diane's on it, and help is on the way. I just wanted to make sure our listeners knew.
I'm sure it makes all the difference in the world of their Christmas.
They do know that we'll be safe here because help is on the way here. Chicago and Seattle at 6.5. Where are you going to lean here as far as my answer here? But just to go back really quick on Russell Wilson, really struggled last week. I don't love their offense right now. I don't like any of it, and it's very much like, I think, what I described Fields, like, two top heavy, too big play driven, and they got to figure something out. Got to figure out that intermediate game here in Seattle. But 6.5 at home.
I like what Chicago and Justin Fields are going to be able to do given Seattle's defense. So Chicago to cover.
Give me the Bears because the Seattle Seahawks will play close games. So 6.5 feels massive. Anyway, let's go New York Giants at the Philadelphia Eagles.
How many games are still left?
There's 6 games. We're going to devote 2 minutes to each. Okay.
All right.
That's just where we are.
Okay.
Right now. Ready? Go. New York Giants at the Philadelphia Eagles. Eagles by 10. Eagles, it's like 1978 again. They're running for 200 yards a game and just dominating on the ground.
It's beautiful. Beautiful to watch.
It is. Mm-hmm. They're going to cover the 10 here at home.
Crushing offensive line. Jordan Mailata, Lane Johnson, Jason Kelsey. All 3 of those guys at one point were like miles downfield blocking for those guys. The Giants defense has not been particularly good lately. The Giants are running Mike Glennon out there on offense. It's not a good time for New York. They, I think, are looking to the future and to the new regime that's probably going to be running the place. And, you know, don't really care that they're down to the Eagles in terms of the spread.
Yeah, I like I'm liking the Eagles in this. The way they're playing, I think the defense is not as soft as they were earlier in the year. They're playing a lot better. Darius Slay is having a really good season. Remember the Giants beat them a couple weeks ago though, and that was right as we started to get excited about the Eagles. And Jalen Hurts had three interceptions. I think only 14 completions in that game. I don't think we see that same game again from the Eagles. It took some really bad play from Hurts and that offense in general. I just don't think we see that. So give me the Eagles.
Yep.
To cover the 10 at home.
Agreed.
Another 10 point spread. We got to be leading the nation in 10 point spreads this year. Bucks are also favored by 10. They're at Carolina facing the Panthers. Bucks coming off their horrible loss, 9-0 against the New Orleans Saints. Last year, I think they played the Panthers right after their Saints debacle too and put up 48 on them. So the Bucks, for whatever that's worth, have a history of bouncing back, 1-year history of bouncing back from their bad Saints game. Mm. Are they going to do it this week, and are they going to cover the 10 at Carolina?
They're dealing with a lot of problems. I mean, obviously you lose Chris Godwin, that's the big one, but they lost a bunch of other players in that game as well. There's a lot of people that are injured, not 100%, dealing with whatever. The Bucks, they're kind of struggling. They're trying to get through at this point. Now look, Carolina's got its own problems. Like, they're still talking about this 2 quarterback system, only now it's Cam Newton and Sam Darnold, not Cam and PJ.
Don't know who to prepare for.
You just don't know
who to prepare for.
I think you could probably solve that by just not preparing for any of them.
You got to get your linebackers ready for the ball coming to you, though. You have to know, is it going to be a laser beam from Cam Newton, or is it going to be a little bit softer from Sam Darnold?
Yeah, that's the thing. Lavonte David, another one of those players that's injured and is supposed to miss the rest of the regular season.
Leonard Fournette out for the rest of the regular season. Did you mention him?
I didn't, but you're right. He's one of them. Tampa Bay obviously is much better. They have a significantly better quarterback. They don't have an absolute train wreck of an offensive line. There are many reasons that the Bucs are favored by 10. On the other hand, they are dealing with a lot. Like, this is closer than it should be.
I mean, Mike Evans questionable with a hamstring, and hamstrings are just questionable injuries in general. Antonio Brown coming off the suspension, questionable with the ankle that he was dealing with before his suspension. If both of those guys play, I think the Bucs will figure it out, depending on how healthy Evans is. But that's risky. You know, hamstrings get tweaked. And it is going to be a little tough with Brashad Perryman. He's out as well. And it sounds weird, but not having Perryman to, like, fill in on Sunday night kind of hurt them. And it ended up being Jalen Darden and Tyler Johnson and Scotty Miller. So they got to figure out other playmakers. And the same thing with Fournette. As much as I didn't think he was a good player, really, going into the season, he's been good this year. He's caught the ball and turned upfield and done simple stuff that I think has made the Bucs offense better. So I do think they're getting it's getting depleted there in Tampa Bay. So what I said on the PFF Daily the other day, Tom Brady's got to play better. I mean, he's just got to play better and carry these guys down the stretch here. He hasn't played his best football since probably, you know, earlier in the season. And but I think it's going to be tough for Carolina to move the ball as well. So we could see a lower scoring game. I'll take the Bucs to bounce back and cover it, but 10 is a lot.
It's
dependent on if Evans and Antonio Brown are both not playing for some reason, I would take Carolina to cover it.
Yeah. God, I hate this line.
As of now, I'll take Tampa Bay, though, assuming they're going to play.
Yeah, I'm going to go with some weird Carolina cover. I think somehow they'll get there.
All right, for no Carolina reason. Covering the 10. Bucks playing. They have to win out if they're going to win the number one seed. Probably need Green Bay to lose two games and Dallas to lose. I mean, there's a lot of what-ifs there. It looks like Tampa Bay is going to win the division, but probably out of the bye situation.
The power ranking comparison is miserable if you're a Carolina Panthers fan. Overall, number 3 versus number 27.
There's just a lot of
defense, number 6 versus number 20. Offense, number 2 versus number 30. Strength of schedule has been much harder for Tampa Bay than Carolina. Like, the whole thing is just doesn't make good reading if you're a Panthers fan.
All right, Detroit Lions at the Atlanta Falcons. My son Harry says, hey, Detroit Lions, big Lions fan all of a sudden. He's like, hey, they're going to beat the Falcons. So I'm going to go with Harry here.
Okay.
Falcons are favored by 5.5 here. Lions coming off a huge win against the Arizona Cardinals. Can they keep that momentum going, Sam, against the Falcons?
I mean, that's just disrespect, given that the game the Detroit Lions just had.
Yeah.
It probably should be closer than that, right? Like, our Atlanta...
Goff could be out here.
Does that matter?
Yes.
Does it?
He's better than David Blau, and he's better than Tim Boyle. Yes.
Is he?
Yes.
Is he, though?
I mean, stop it.
Is he? Jared Goff has a grade of 59 this year.
Yeah.
I mean, Jared Goff was essentially written off and driven out of town because he had a grade of 71 last year. Now it's 59. He's been terrible. Even last week,
he made
in the win against Arizona, he made like
throws.
One dime at the
he
right
had
before
one
the
little
half.
Misread underneath. It was a dropped interception. Could have been a game changer, but you know. But he tested positive on Monday, so I think he's probably out. Most guys have not tested out within a week.
Yeah, I don't think only T.J. Watt is the only guy I think to have done that. So
and we know the Watts have a superior immune system.
Of course.
So, yeah. Of course, that's the only guy.
Well, they've channeled all of it from, you know, stopping injuries into defeating COVID.
Yes.
That explains J.J. Watt.
The Watts are really good at that.
Yeah.
So probably no Jared Goff. I don't think Dan Campbell committed to Tim Boyle. And so that's why David Blau is...
I wouldn't commit to him after the last performance either.
Is a possibility as well. I think that might be the difference, though. Falcons with... Pro Bowl snub, Cordarrelle Patterson.
Pro Bowl snub.
However, the Lions do have Craig Reynolds at running back, 88.3 grade. Two really nice weeks in a row.
Great tattoo.
And every week we just like to watch Penei Sewell play. He's got a 78 grade.
Not just really Sewell. Their whole offensive line is kind of rolling right now. Like we said heading into the year that there was a scenario where Detroit's offensive line came together and became a top 10 unit. Now, they lost Frank Ragnow at center after a few games. That obviously put a big blow into that. But all of a sudden, it's kind of coming together. The return of Taylor Decker, the fact that Penei Sewell is, if anything, better on the right side than he was at the left side where he was pretty good. That offensive line is coming together and playing pretty well right now, which is why guys like Craig Reynolds are putting up huge numbers. Anyone they plug in there right now is rushing the ball well. And then, you know, it's just the quarterback problem.
Make a pick for this Lions-Falcons game because we got breaking news for the next game.
I will go Detroit, even if they start Tim Boyle and or David Blau.
Jared Goff hater. Give me the Falcons to cover the 5.5 here. Miami Dolphins at the New Orleans Saints. Monday night football. As of this very second, the Saints are favored by 3. However, just announced, the starter for the New Orleans Saints on Monday night football, Ian Book.
Oh, God.
Is getting the call for the Saints. I believe... Saints are starting Ian Book per Ian Rappaport and our friend Tom Pelissero. Trevor Siemian out and then Taysom Hill going on the COVID list. So it's Ian Book's story to be told here.
Stop.
On Monday Night Football.
Remember the sliders? Like arm strength versus anticipation and accuracy and those things. And the idea that if you're low in one, you have to be really high in the other one. Otherwise, the whole thing's not going to work.
Yeah, I do.
Ian Book's really low on all of them. Like, doesn't have particularly good accuracy and anticipation, has a noodle for an arm. Like, he's the wrong end of all of the sliders.
He is.
So, he's going to be bad.
What about accuracy? Because Cody Kessler was on the wrong end of anticipation and arm strength, but he was really high in accuracy.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure Book's just bad at all of them.
You know where he's high, though? Is athleticism. He's an athletic quarterback. He can run around. He's not, like, straight line speed, fast, or whatever. He's just athletic QB. And I think you might have to have one of those, like, Kevin Hogan like, first start. Remember Kevin Hogan kind of came out of nowhere and ran for 100 yards?
Right.
You need one of those games, I think, from Ian Book here.
There's some crazy record that Kevin Hogan has that's like, what is the sort of the lowest second game rushing total for a guy that has like 100 plus yards? You know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah, that was a good one, yeah.
He's got, because he had that one ridiculous 100-yard plus game, but the next highest is like 23 yards or something.
Did you know that Vinny Testaverde had a game with over 100 yards?
I did, yeah.
I did not know that.
But it's another one. It's like, remember the game at the end where Travis Kelce just somehow like ran, it was like Pac-Man, right? All these things chasing him but not actually catching him and just ran through the whole defense. Vinny had one of those runs. I don't even remember who it was against, but Vinny's just weaving randomly throughout the entire defense. None of them are catching him. It's like, what is happening here?
Was it Steve DeBerg who had the 71-yard run where nobody was like within the area code of him or whatever? So how does like a Brady or a Breeze or a Peyton not randomly have one of those 50-yard runs in their career? They didn't just like stumble into one after all that time. I mean, Testaverde did.
There would need to be a lot of real estate for Brady to get 70 yards before
there would need
somebody
to be
got there.
A lot of misdirection and eight men on the field and a lot of people
would need to
over.
Be like a you know, like a the Music City Miracle with like the throwback, and all of a sudden Brady's got like 45 yards of open space, and even then he'd need somebody to fall over or something and create a pile.
I mean, somebody like 80 yards behind him would catch him before he got 40.
Yeah,
you know. But anyway, as of now, the Saints are favored by 3. I don't know how much Book changes the number here. Dolphins are hot, though. They also, I mean, this Dolphins are leading the league in sacks. I mean, they're going to be getting after this Saints offense here.
They are, yeah. I didn't quite understand this line before Ian Book was a thing. I don't quite get, I mean, Miami Dolphins are, Tua's not coming off a good game, but Tua's been playing pretty well recently. Okay, Miami has a terrible offensive line. That's nothing new. I feel like they're probably a better team than New Orleans right now.
Yeah, I'm with you there, man. Tua's coming off of a not-so-good game, but overall he'd been playing pretty clean brand of football. We mentioned, now, here's where I think the matchup comes in, right? The Jets were challenging the Dolphins. Tua had to throw the ball down the field more than ever. It was ugly. The Saints are going to do that, assuming their guys are healthy. They've got the horses in the back end to make life difficult, to play tight man coverage and make you make more tight window throws. So if they do play that game and force Tua to throw the ball down the field, we could have another low-scoring effort here where I don't know if the Saints – it's always tough to judge the Saints because they just – I don't know. They have those high-end games. They match up really well against the Bucs, but they also had that same game against the Packers in Week 1 where they just dominated and made Aaron Rodgers and the Packers look horrible offensively. But the Saints, they don't do it every week. They're capable, right? Dennis Allen does a really good job, and it seems like in one-game samples they can do it. It's tough to predict exactly when they're going to do it unless it's against the Bucs. But could be seeing a low-scoring game here if the Saints play defense the way they just did.
Yeah, it really is tough to sort of identify why and when they're going to have those games.
But when they're also healthy, too, like Marcus Davenport and Cameron Jordan, their pass rush grade as a team isn't great. But again, in one-game samples, especially if you are facing this Dolphins offensive line, you know.
Reading the pros and cons for Ian Book in the PFF draft guide, I think, is instructive. So, pros. Gamer, who rose to the occasion in 2020, huge down the stretch in the win over Clemson. So already we're like, our first thing we're telling you about this guy is moxie. That's what we like to see. Touted by those around the Notre Dame program for his intangibles. So moxie, intangibles. Light on his feet. Thrived on second reaction plays. Cons. Locks in
everything
on one,
that you can quantify.
Locks in on one receiver routinely. So slow to come off. Well below average arm strength for the NFL. Not athletic enough to pull escape artist act in the NFL. Has to see it to throw it. Very few throws in rhythm, timing. So good at moxie and intangibles at the college level. Bad at everything else.
Yeah.
I don't see it going well.
Also, on top of that, from NO.football, New Orleans football, New Orleans.football, our friend Nick Underhill, hearing more players are going on the list. So we don't have those players, but we know that they're going to be more players. And if we had mentioned those players and they're not going to play, just ignore that analysis. That's what I would suggest.
The good news is I think Miami are winning whatever happens. So that's my pick.
I'll take the Dolphins as well to cover the 3. This is what we got. This is the spread we got. right? This is why you bet early. We got it at 3.
They're going to win outright, whatever happens.
Yeah, I'll take the Dolphins as well here on Monday Night Football. Two more games remaining here. Jacksonville, you didn't put this last?
No, but only because I forgot the last one and couldn't
we'll go the other way.
Okay.
Chargers at Houston Texans.
Yes, with the 10-point spread game as opposed to the other one.
The Pick'em's going to be the best game of the week.
Yeah.
Are you on that game? I hope you're on that game.
I could be. I haven't checked. I'm on one of those late games.
Zach Wilson versus Trevor Lawrence is a lot to watch there. All right, we're talking Chargers-Texans right now, though. Texans also. Oh, geez. Texans getting 10 at home, and they've got a whole bunch of people on the list as well.
Excellent. Beautiful.
This is fun. How much do the Chargers win by?
Well, the Chargers have their own bunch of guys on the list as well.
Eckler's on it.
Yep. Went on yesterday, so he's done probably. Joey Bosa went on at, the 20th? I mean, they're missing some pretty significant players. Corey Linsley's on the list.
Joey Bosa on the 20th. So
that was their big outbreak day. Like, they had a bunch of guys go on the 20th.
Chris Rumpf, Trey Marshall, Tavon Campbell. Hey, there's a lot on both sides here. Eckler, Jalen Guyton, undisclosed. Why is it undisclosed? One on the the COVID list. It's probably COVID.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. Sante Samuel also questionable with a concussion, as is Donald Parham.
Yes.
Got hit pretty hard, hit his head pretty hard on Thursday Night Football last week. Scary situation, but it seems like he's doing a lot better now. I wouldn't expect him to play at this point. But
no.
Anyway, a lot of pressure again on Justin Herbert to carry the Chargers offense and Davis Mills to carry the Texans offense.
Hmm. I think you have to have more confidence at this point in Justin Herbert than Davis Mills.
I would say. Brandon Cooks being out, too. I mean, he's the guy that...
He's the only guy that they've had doing anything good on offense.
Right. That's the big one, I think, for the Texans. But they've got several losses on both sides of the ball here.
The good news for the Houston Texans is that a loss here starts to put you back in the number one overall pick conversation, where you screwed that up. By giving the Jags a number one pick, all of a sudden you can kind of get back in the mix. So there's something to look forward to.
We spent all offseason trying to figure out the Texans' offseason strategy. Maybe it was just anticipation of a COVID outbreak.
Maybe.
Like, we're going to have the deepest team in the league right. with all sorts of veterans.
There's no difference between our top 20 guys and the bottom 20 guys. So a COVID outbreak of 25 people is going to have zero effect on this team.
No one's going to be more equipped than the Houston Texans to handle an outbreak.
Yeah. I'm not sure that's the best way of dealing with that, but... It's a way.
So this is the game that the Texans were preparing for all offseason by building the depth.
Yeah.
And they are getting 10 points.
Great.
At home.
Mm-hmm.
I think Herbert chucks it around the yard and Chargers cover it.
Yeah. Trying to talk myself into a way where they kept it closer than that, but no. Even if the Chargers,
if a doctor goes in and punctures Davis Mills' lungs before the game, and then Tyrod gets the start,
I mean, it's only fair he gets one of those in his direction, right?
Then maybe Tyrod leads them to victory. Could happen.
Victory, wow.
Or to
under 10 points
to covering it. Yeah,
yeah.
We're both taking the Chargers here.
Yeah,
I'm running out of gas here. Running out of steam.
I mean, these are some rough games at the end.
The Jets have about 15 players on the COVID list, and it's a pick 'em. Jacksonville Jaguars.
Did we clarify that the line moved like 1 point when they put 15 guys on the list?
That does not say much for the Jags. That's interesting, too, because Vegas like really bought into the Jags last week, and they're like, nope, we're out. Jets can have their whole team on the COVID list, and it doesn't matter. It's not moving the line.
Yeah.
Next week's line already has the Patriots favored by 16.5 over the Jaguars.
Ouch.
So
the quarterback comparison, right? That's this game.
Yeah, it's Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, that's
fine. The number one pick versus the number two pick. Trevor Lawrence, the generational talent, versus Zach Wilson, the only guy with more upside than Trevor Lawrence. Right now, overall PFF grade, 58.0 for Zach Wilson, 57.9 for Trevor Lawrence.
How about that?
Lockstep. Now, it's lockstep, 20 points lower than you want it to be, but it's lockstep. Trevor Lawrence with a slightly higher passer rating when kept clean in the pocket, conversely, a worse passer rating under pressure.
Wash.
Trevor Lawrence with a slightly higher big-time throw rate, albeit one that's still pretty bad. Zach Wilson with a higher turnover-worthy play rate. They're both bad. They're both terrible, in fact, so far this year. And the really scary thing is that neither one of them is showing much in terms of upside.
I will say the new green line does a pretty nice job highlighting the player injuries right up here, up front. Does a nice job. You cycle back and forth between the Jaguars and the Jets and their war ranking and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
John Franklin Myers, the best player on the reserve list, the COVID list. Elijah Moore also on the list. Bryce Hall, questionable. So, yeah, there's just not a lot of Jets out there. This is the week for the Jaguars.
Yeah. Overall power ranking, 32nd for the Jags, 30th for the Jets. I mean, there's not, like, this is the QB matchup. Really what you're looking for is one of them to show something, anything.
Yeah.
Some kind of sign that you exist and they're alive. Like, you know that the meme with the big tall guy with the stick poking, like, do something?
Yeah.
One of them. One of them show something, anything. Anything in this game. Please. I beg you.
I'm
getting sad watching both of you. I just want to see one of you do something.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking for. Every week, watching Trevor and Zach just to see their development and see some progress.
And if you can't do it against the other one, i.e. the defense that the other one is bringing to the table, what are you doing here?
Just saw this tweeted out too. Dolphins, QBs the Dolphins will have faced in November and December. Tyrod Taylor, Lamar Jackson, Joe Flacco, Cam Newton, Mike Glennon, Zach Wilson, Ian Book. And this is why the nerds said defense doesn't matter.
Well,
is why they coined that phrase, defense doesn't matter.
All of a sudden the win streak becomes more easy to explain.
Yeah, the win streak and the sack totals and us saying, the Dolphins defense is really starting to figure it out. Which is true. Like you can have improvement on defense, but you can also have a stronger indicator, which is probably the quarterbacks that you faced outside of Lamar.
Who they completely, like, so Lamar is the interesting one because they came in with a game plan that completely screwed up.
They earned that one,
right?
I think. The Dolphins,
but the other ones
earned,
like,
that.
That one, you probably needed the game plan for things to happen that way. The other quarterbacks, you probably didn't need to come up with a game plan to have problems against, to cause them problems. You know what I mean? Like Mike Glennon. If you just rolled out of bed and been like, what's the game plan today? Yeah, whatever. We'll figure it out when we get there. Like, it would have worked. You know what I mean?
We'll figure it out when we get there. It's definitely what happens in NFL buildings. J.C. Tretter just tested positive for the Browns. Tyler's not happy, Tyler.
Did we just get a expletive screamed from the booth by Tyler,
Tyler's
the Browns
upset.
Fan?
Starting center for the Browns.
Perfect.
And the NFLPA president.
This is, in theory, like a soundproof studio, and we heard him screaming from in there.
It's Thursday at noon. We may have mentioned 50 present. Players who aren't even going to play this weekend.
Probably.
So,
but it's Christmas.
It is Christmas. Make a pick and let's go celebrate
with a festive
holiday.
Moose. Sorry, what's the...
Jaguars, Jets, pick them. Sorry, we were talking about the Dolphins. We were on tangents here.
Oh, God. I have to pick a winner in this game?
Take the opposite of me.
What are you picking?
I'm going to take the Jags.
Fine. The Jags?
Jags.
So I'm stuck with the Jets?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I'm gonna have my Brunel jersey on.
Mm.
Fired up.
Fine.
Watch.
It's in East Rutherford, New Jersey. The Jets are going to win.
Jets at home here. I want to see Trevor in the cold. It's going to be huge, too.
Can you do it in a wet, windy day in East Rutherford?
Can we get a weather report in East Rutherford? Oh, man. There's one other thing I wanted to add about that Baltimore two-point decision. I did some research on sprint outs. I know this isn't, you know, flow of the show here. Sprint out was a bad call, as I expected. I'll have more on it next week. Sprint out being you roll out your quarterback without play action, right? You roll the pocket, sprint him out to throw it.
Not a good idea.
It's like a 28% success rate. So that's the other interesting element.
It's still higher than the goal line fade.
It's not. Fade is better.
Fade's better.
If you add the back shoulder in there, which is built in, right? You run a fade, you could back shoulder it. If you put the back shoulder in, you're in the 40% range.
40%.
Success, which isn't bad. But this is where the analytics discussion about going for it has this other element to it, right?
Yeah, pick the right damn play.
Yes. And I think there's enough information. It's not like we're gonna run sprint right option and it works 90% of the time, but you can put, which it doesn't, but you can put some broad parameters around play concepts historically, like run pass. You start with run pass. Should we run it? Should we pass it? Now, should we run play action, even though they know we're going to run it? Should we still run play action and roll a guy out? Should we run play action and keep him in the pocket? Should we run a zone read? Should we run sprint out? And I would just say you could cross off some plays like sprint out because they work like 28% of the time or 27, whatever the number is. So here's the weather report. 47 degrees in East Rutherford.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't look like
7% chance of rain.
Yeah,
15 mile an hour winds.
The wind is going to be. Both guys have the arm to cut the wind, which is great. So 47. That's not too bad.
No,
for a 1 o'clock game.
No, we're fine.
Great. All right, man. Good show. Really good. Look at that. We flew through the end because, you know, what the heck? Why wouldn't we?
Of course. Yeah, there are some pretty rough games towards the end of this. But the good news is it's Christmas, so.
Elite Up over at PFF.com. Get your Elite package. It might be for everybody, probably at least for edge users.
I think it is. I think it's right.
50% off using the promo code Elite Up, and then 25% off all PFF subscription using NFL Pod. We appreciate everybody. Don't forget the charity drive. We're still raising money for Kentucky and the Tornado Relief Fund.
Pin tweet. My pin tweet at PFF_Sam. The podcast's pin tweet at PFF NFL Pod. That's where the GoFundMe is to raise money for tornado relief in the Midwest.
All right. That'll do it for us. We're at 1,800 of the goal being goals 2,000. So we're very close. We appreciate everybody that has donated there into all of the charity drives we've had here at the PFF NFL
Absolutely.
Podcast. So that's it. Merry Christmas to everybody. Merry Christmas to you and the family.
You
we'll
too,
be
Steve.
Back here.
And the Moose.
We'll be back here Monday morning reviewing all of the Week 16 NFL action.